What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome back to another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shopto. You can find me at C70 or at conroesconclave.com/C70, wherever. You know, just follow me on Twitter. You'll find my stuff. With me, again, is Alan Medlock. You can find him at Medlock1 on Twitter. You can find him at the Redbird Daily writing as well. Again, before we get too far along, want to remind people, go over to iTunes, go wherever, write us and review us. Let us know what you think of the show, not only there, but on Twitter. Appreciate all the questions we get. We've got a few to talk about later on. Appreciate all the people that do tune in a little bit and listen to us ramble. Did not do a show last weekend because of the Cards Madness special show on Wednesday. We didn't figure you wanted to hear from us that close together. So we're back. And Alan, it's just that much closer. We're, you know, what? Less than 10 days, really, or right at 10 days from opening day. It's hard to believe, but it's coming here that quickly.
It has picked up quick. You know, I think the World Baseball Classic kind of helped out on that a little bit with the excitement of the last 2 weeks. But, you know, you finish that and you see Carlos get back, pitch well yesterday, and you realize that he may have one more tune-up before it's, you know, time to go. So it's the long, cold winter's over, and we'll be firing it up.
Yep, and we got a lot of things to do, so let's just jump right in to the Redbird Rewind.
He got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
All right, the Cardinals... Again, continuing to win games. In fact, they've won 5 in a row after a little bit of a stretch last week where they lost 3 of 4. And again, it's hard to say, oh, this is spring training and, oh, this means a lot. But, I mean, you know, as you and I were talking a little bit earlier, the games are getting a little bit more real. The starters are staying a little longer. You're seeing more of the regular lineups. And I'm sure the end of the games is still kind of, you know, minor league free-for-all. But these results probably mean a little bit more than they did just about 6 weeks ago.
They do. And, you know, I've said this ad nauseum, and people are probably tired of hearing about it at this point, but I like the way they're winning. And it's I know there's been a few balls kicked and there's been some base running issues, which I think we're going to get into that here a little bit because it's a veteran at this point who should probably be doing a little bit better on those. But I like the aggressive base running. I like the focused defense, and the pitching looks like it's coming around right on schedule. There's going to still be some hiccups, and I think you've seen that maybe with Leak and Waino a little bit more than makes you comfortable. But you can just tell there's just a different mindset in camp this year. It's impressed me from day one, and really makes me look forward to getting going next week.
Yeah, the Cardinals sitting at 17-7, leading the National League. I think it's the first time they've actually led it when we've been doing these shows. They're usually about a half game behind Pittsburgh. Now they're half a game ahead. The Yankees are 20-7. If we see a Yankees-Cardinals World Series, well, that's fine, I think. That's a good one for the historians, but it seems like we might have a few things to do between now and then. Let's talk. The Cardinal, like I said, this opening day lineup, this opening day roster is starting to take a little bit more shape. We've seen people like Sam Tuilavala be sent down. We've seen things like, Tony Peralta most likely being the starting third baseman. And Jed Jerko, the super utility type person. Let's talk a little bit about that first. I mean, there's other spots on this roster that have made some interesting discussion this week. But let's talk about the fact that the Cardinals are coming out and saying, hey, Johnny Peralta's our guy. When the spring started, did you expect it to wind up that way?
I didn't think that he would stake his claim as well as he has. And, I thought that this was going to be more of the, since Matheny's taken over these position battles, I say that, you know, loosely, as they're never battles, they were decided beforehand that when it would have to swing way on the other end for Jerko to gain those starts. I think they did the, I think selling him as a super utility is really going to work. I like that. I wanted him to see more time at third, but I like how they're handling this. It seems like Johnny's coming back healthy. Like Zach Gifford put in a post a couple weeks ago of how that narrative's kind of overrated, that it wasn't as much his wrist as it was just a declining performance. And so we'll see. But I think I like Peralta in that spot. I think that I think Jericho moving around, being maybe a next to every day at bat at a different position every day, is still going to be a benefit. And between he and Adams, they may have a loaded bench.
Yeah, I mean, and this is what the team looks like opening day is not what the team's going to look like in August. I don't think that's most likely the case. You're right. Seeing Peralta hit, you know, if you look at average, he's just hitting .225, but there's a lot of kind of lower averages on this team too. Some that aren't. But he has 7 of his 9 hits are going for extra bases. And reading the articles today about the fact that he was getting that really seems to be the thing that they were looking for. They were looking for him to have that kind of authority in his swing. They'll deal with, I mean, especially, you know, if he had one more hit right now, he'd be hitting .250. And if you're hitting .250, mm-hmm. and, you know, a majority of your hits going for extra bases, then I think you're going to be okay. It sounds like, again, I haven't seen him. I don't know if you haven't. I know we've talked in the past. You haven't had a chance to watch many games either. But from all reports, it sounds like that he's lost some weight as well and is playing defense, you know, again, not Gold Glove, but enough that you're not, when this idea of a pitching and defense focused team, you're not embarrassed to run him out there, mm-hmm. just because he has the bat.
Well, and I agree with that. And I don't think they ever lost confidence in his bat. I think that they gave him some directives to come back leaner, come back thinner, and to come back with a little more mobility. And it looks like he's done all those things well, because he is a calming presence in that infield. You know, his range has never been great, but as just like Leland said, he goes, whoever picks him up is going to get one hell of a player. And on a team, no, is he going to be an all-star? Probably not, but he could be a cornerstone on a very good team.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like I said, it's last year of his contract. He's got something to play for if he wants to continue playing after this year, which would assume that he would. There's a lot of things to go in there. So, you know, again, I think this is one of those situations. I mean, like you said, not always are these competitions real competitions. But I think this year, not only was it a fairly good competition between those guys, although Peralta had the upper hand just because Jerko is so flexible going around. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, you look at Jerko, he hit in .237, 4 doubles, 2 homers, you know, so 6 of his 9 are going for extra bases. You know, the numbers are not too far apart, and when the numbers aren't too far apart, you know, with the fact that Jerko can play other places, that really does lean into Peralta. But again, it feels like this is one of those things that we're going to see Peralta maybe a majority of the time at third, but not as much as you would expect for a starter on a team.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a rested Peralta is probably a much better Peralta. So I think that they played their cards well on this one. Like we had spoken about, the competition factor, I kind of knew that maybe the direction they're going in, but right as camp opened up, you know, Derek Gould would do the live, Facebook lives from there. He would show their infield, and, Jericho wasn't at third a single time of the first 3 or 4 times that they did it. So I was like, well, that probably explains a lot. There was probably a lot of backfield work where he worked in all the positions, but when they had the main group of 6 to 8 out there, Jericho was at second the entire time.
And Jerko at second is going to be an interesting discussion, because, you know, we have this idea, and this is you know, Colton Wong is always the discussion point, I feel like.
Sure.
There's always somebody that seems to draw the focus of the team, and there's a couple people on this team, but Wong is definitely one of them. You know, Colton has not had a good spring. Let's be honest. He's hitting 190. He has, you know, two extra base hits. He's struck out 10 times and 42 at bats. That being said, you know, as they were showing, you know, Wong went and did, you know, the minor league run through a couple of days ago, where he would just jump into a game and get in a bat or two and go on to another game and get it more, you know, got like 10, 11 at bats in one day, trying to get his swing jump started, trying to get into that rhythm. I know there's a lot of discussion, you know, especially with Jerko being available at second base. You know, what do you think, you know, what do you think the Cardinals need to do with Wong? I mean, is this a situation, and I guess not only what do they need to do, but how long do they need to do it for?
Yeah, that's a great question. I first want to say this is that I love his skill set and I want him to do well. I'm even losing faith in him, and I'm sure management is probably more so. Greg Garcia hitting well and playing well, it probably doesn't help his case. But what I think really hurts Wong's case is the two pickoffs. Just the lapse in judgment. It's getting hard for me to pull for him. And I hate to say that because you never want to give up on anybody. But, if we see these things and then you see the headlines that are coming in the paper of, hey, Greg Garcia is earning more at bats and he's working his way into a possible left-handed equivalent to maybe a Jerko. You're going, okay, these are coming from somewhere. And it kind of makes you wonder what the mindset is with Colton. And it's kind of disheartening right now to where I was hoping he would be loose, no pressure, hit to the bottom of the lineup. And I'm just not so sure. I just can't figure him out. And I think that may be fan base wide.
And that's fair, and there's some of that. But I don't know, again, I don't know if it feels like, I know Derek Gould has said that, Steven Piscotty's hitting 150 on the spring. I mean, and mm-hmm. nobody's talking about Steven Piscotty, but apparently, you know, he is working on, you know, making some adjustments on his swing, and that's, you know, he's hit some balls hard. It's just, you know, it's kind of one of those things, especially in 40 at bats, you really have to see how they're doing, and Colton may not have that success. But, you know, I mean, this is a team that just 2 or 3 years ago was carrying Pete Cosma as their shortstop.
Sure.
And played him every day. I'm of the opinion, again, John Mozeliak wants to play Colton Wong. He wants the defense, and I think everybody will agree that his defense is significantly better than Jerko's. You know, I'm of the opinion you play him for April, and I mean pretty much play him every day, almost every day. You know, as much as you can, and see where you're at. Because if you give him, you know, a month of regular playing time, and he's still not hitting, then maybe you reevaluate it. I don't want to do it after a week. I don't want to do it after an 0 for 5, which is what it feels like has happened in the past with Colton. But if he gets, you know, a month, 6 weeks of pretty much, you know, 90% of the starts, and I know he's, you know, I think, after all this discussion, I can almost lay you money that he's not going to start opening day because there's a lefty on the mound. And which means everybody's going to get him all in a tizzy, when that lineup comes out. But I just, you know, I feel like if he can play almost every day, especially against, righties and maybe some lefties too, I don't know that it's going to hurt too much to get him out there then in 6 weeks and you reevaluate, you know, if he's still hitting 130 and really not looking lost at the plate, then, you know, maybe you do bring in a Jerko. Or you let Greg Garcia play second base on a regular basis. Although I'm still of the opinion that Greg Garcia works best in small doses.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree with that.
So, I mean, is that reasonable? Is that what you would, you know, just kind of leaving Wong and let him go at it for a while?
And I agree. And I think that that's how they have to handle this. I was really hoping that he would have a hot spring to where we wouldn't be having these conversations. And I understand that a lot of times guys are working on adjustments and some just quite frankly are probably tired of being down there at this point. And I was hoping that wouldn't be the case with him. I was hoping he would take spring, play well, play smart, be ready to go. Because I think that the team, how they have it set up, is better with him on the field. And that may completely change if he's not on the field. You know, that may only be for the till the trade deadline or, you know, wherever, you know, if they were to flip him or what they were planning to do. But at this point, I think he needs to play. And I think he needs to play every day. And let's see what you can get out of him, because I think the team was based on the athleticism that he is available or that he can bring.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I don't say this because I don't believe that you play the contracts, but he is under contract. I mean, that is going to factor in somewhat. I mean, there's a reason that John Moselaw gave him the 5-year deal, and you don't really want to see him turn around and have to get rid of him quickly into a deal kind of like they did with Alan Craig. You know, there is some pressure on Colton, and he's not always, at least from the outside looking in, doesn't seem to always have taken kindly to pressure. But, you know, hopefully, like I said, hopefully he says that he's a guy that needs to play, that needs the regular rhythm to get his swing going, and I can see that. I mean, I'm sure there's timing and there's other issues that are important. And if he can realize that he doesn't have to hit the ball out of the ballpark every time, because he's going to do that occasionally. I mean, he's going to hit it out, but he doesn't. That's not his game. And his game's not. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be an on-base guy. From what he's doing, the way he talks about things, he's never going to be the guy that's going to be real patient. So he's going to be a 7 or 8 hitter most likely. But if Colton Wong is doing what Colton Wong can do, that's a very, very good 7th, 8th place hitter, and it makes your lineup much better. So, you know, I'm content to sit it out and wait. And I know, you know, we proved it last year. Every game, a game in April that you lose is just as important as a game in September that you lose. But I think you have to try him out there and see, you know, on a regular basis and see. And hopefully, you know, hopefully he clicks and this discussion's a little bit moot, at least for a little while.
Yeah, a seventh and eighth place hitter with the lineup they put out is pretty dang good. And that's a 7th and 8th place hitter with Gold Glove potential. So I think that he has to play, and this may be his last shot, but I still say you give him 6 weeks and let him, you know, run it out there if he's not injured, and let's see what you got.
So another person that's being run out there to the dismay of some people on Twitter and other places is Matt Adams. Matt Adams, who is hitting 282, 4 homers. He's tied with the team lead in home runs. Showing the hitting that I think we kind of hoped that we would see out of Matt Adams. But what everybody's gotten worked up about is the fact that he's played a little bit of left field, including playing there today against the Nationals. You know, if you can't play left field in spring training, I don't know when you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that's the place to see if it's even possible. And you know, with Matt Adams' new body style, maybe it is. You know, I haven't, in the two games, I think he's played out there in like 2 different games, I haven't heard of any misplay. I mean, he doesn't have any errors, but I don't think I've heard of any misplays or balls that normal people would have gotten. If he plays out there at all this year, it would probably be, what, less than 10 games, I would expect.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I have trouble. I mean, I don't have trouble believing that people get worked up because it's the internet and people always get worked up about everything. But I don't see the reason to get worked up on something that really probably isn't going to have much of an impact on the team. And it, unless it's positive. I mean, if he actually can do that and you can get his bat in the lineup every once in a while, or, you know, when Mike Matheny does some sort of double switch that takes out Randall Grichuk in a 1-run game, at least you could put Matt Adams in. I mean, and maybe not lose as much. You know, I don't think that we're going to see it very often if it doesn't work.
No, I agree with that. And I kind of like the creativity of it, just to kind of see what you got, you know, kind of reward him for coming in camp in shape and getting him more at bats and showing a little more confidence in him. He's hit enough to kind of fulfill what we thought he was going to be, a good pinch hitter, a good backup first baseman, you know, gives Carpenter a little flexibility. And, you know, I thought it was much ado about nothing as well. Twitter was on fire that day when they whenever Gould came out and said that it was a possibility. Don't think it's going to happen very often. I can kind of see where they're coming from, but I don't think it's as big deal as was made out. I kind of like his role of, playing some first, hitting, and being a big bat off the bench. So
I guess you could play a little bit of devil's advocate here, though. And one of the things that John Mozeliak said over the off season was that he felt last year's team was almost too flexible. That they were going to try to be a little bit more, I don't want to say rigid, but a little bit more, rigid, I guess is really the way to do it.
Yeah.
People were going to play in their spots and they were going to know their roles and they were going to, you got to have some flexibility on a 25-man roster, but it sounded like, with what Mo did and what Mo said, that he was trying to, if you want to be unkind about it, limit Mike Matheny's options so he can make better decisions. It is kind of then ironic that, even though you felt like this is a roster that was supposed to be static, now you're taking a guy that you never would have thought 6 weeks ago was going to be playing in the outfield and putting him in the outfield so you have more flexibility options. It's a little strange to see it that way if you look at it in that angle, I guess.
Yeah, very, very strange. I completely agree with you because I thought that was an issue last year about how I specifically remember saying this on some of our former podcasts that I thought that was a problem last year when them flipping guys around and playing them somewhere different every day. I kind of thought they painted themselves into a corner immediately giving Carpenter the chance to play first without looking at, and they may have looked at deals to be what was, to see what was available for Adams. So I'm not so sure, but I kind of thought that was odd as well. I think there's probably more to it. I don't think it's for trade. I don't think it's for teams to see that he can play the outfield. I just think there was a reward for him coming into camp in shape and, hey, we're going to show that we need a left-handed hitting outfielder sometimes. Maybe you can fill that role. Let's see what you can do. But you're exactly right. I mean, it's, I love how they're trying these guys out after putting their foot down and saying that they're not going to.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I don't think any team is going to say, whoa, I got to trade for Matt Adams now that he can play outfield. I don't think that's going to be the case. Now, it does perhaps show that Matt Adams is a, quote, team player, that he maybe can be flexible in situations. But he gets his bat in the lineup. And I mean, again, he has hit well. I'm with you. I never understood why the Cardinals came out and said, Matt Carpenter is our first baseman. When they did that, what, in like November or something of that nature?
Yeah, it was right. It was the first meeting after the season ended. Yeah. It was the, whenever, Mo and, Matheny met with they had their first presser, and that was one of the first things they said. It was, we're going to get a center fielder. We're going to try to become more athletic. And part of that is moving Carpenter to first so he can have somewhere to plant his feet and build from there. And I was like, well, that's interesting. You've got a battle at third. I said, but what are you going to do with Adams? So, it's, I don't know. Head scratcher a little bit.
Yeah. Cause I mean, not only does it not make, it doesn't let you, I mean, I can understand. And I think I've said this before that I can understand John will say like, Mike Matheny going to Matt Carpenter and say, look, our plan is for you to play first base all year long next year. Practice plan. That's our plan for that. Things could change, but that's our plan. But to go out and publicly say that, not only does it, it kind of undercuts any kind of trade market you might have for Matt Adams as well, because teams are going to say, well, you've got two left-handed first basemen. You got a guy in Matt Adams that can't really play anywhere else. I mean, that was the idea. What are you going to do with this guy? I'm not going to give you full market value because, you really need to get rid of him. Now, obviously, John Mozeliak has a different idea of needing to get rid of people because he's always seems to. Every year he goes into the offseason, I think, well, he's got to make this deal and he's got to make this deal, and he never makes them. There's years where we got all this stockpile of pitching, got to trade a pitcher, and no. You got all this, you got two left-handed first basemen, you got to trade, Matt Adams. No, Matt Adams is still here. And so, but I feel like you undercut yourself doing that. So it was very strange to see them come out publicly do that, especially, I mean, you know what, I mean, when we got down to, you know, Edwin Encarnacion being on the market, and being relatively cheap, you know, to the point where the Cardinals could have made a run for him, then what do you tell my, you know, you have to publicly backtrack on Matt Carpenter if you had, or you don't make a run at him because you don't want a public backtrack, and that's even worse. So, I don't know. It seemed kind of strange, but that's where we're at. So I still feel like Matt Adams is, you know, a huge possibility of being traded, especially since he's shown himself to be fairly productive this spring. But I don't know when and if that'll actually get happen.
No, yeah, I agree with that. It's felt like all spring that was what they were building up toward. Like the next roster move you see was going to be some kind of deal made, and it may very well happen. They like to play that game late into March. They show a lot of patience on those, but it kind of seems redundant to have both of them, and the roster is kind of disjointed with that. But I personally would kind of like to have him on the club as that left-handed bat off the bench that will play a little first. I just hope they don't get crazy with the outfield situation.
All right. Well, that's pretty good for the hitting. And before we dive into the bench, we may come back to the hitting anyway, but let's take this idea of the starting rotation into our next segment, up the middle.
Alisaev, the second for one, the double play! What a double play by Ozzie Smith! Oh, mercy!
Alright. After much ado, Mike Matheny came out this week and said Carlos Martinez is going to be the starting pitcher for opening night. Adam Wainwright will go second. It sounds like most likely Lance Lynn is third, Mike Leake is fourth, and Michael Wacha is going to be fifth. You know, I know we've talked about this before. It's no big surprise to see Martinez. Is maybe a little bit of a surprise it's taken this long for Mike Matheny to make that announcement.
I thought it should have been Martinez this whole time. I think he's their next stud. I think he's a superstar in the making, and this may be the year that it happens. I still thought it was going to be Wainwright. I still was a little surprised when he announced it, and pleasantly surprised. And it made me kind of wonder if Wainwright wasn't the one that went to Matheny and said, hey, it may be time that we do this. Now, I don't know. He seems to be pretty prideful. And they're, you know, the team, like with Holiday hitting third, and, you know, it went from Carpenter pitching every opening day to Wainwright pitching every opening day. They've kind of been stuck in their ways on that. So I really thought that it was going to be Waino to start that Saturday or that Sunday night at home. So I was pleasantly surprised, and I really like the makeup of the rotation. I know there's been some hiccups through spring, but like we both talked about, I mean, they're always working on different things. I know that it's also one of those situations where Wainwright his working on things, he loses more confidence from the fan base when he's doing those and he's giving up hard contact. Even with that being said, I really think we're going to see a closer return to 15 in the rotation than 16. I think they're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, well, let's talk about this. We got a Twitter question tonight. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and touch it on it here since this is where it really fits. From one of your fellow writers at Redbird Daily, which I know doesn't really narrow that part down since there's so many of them. But Zach Gifford, ZJ Gifford, on Twitter asked if there was any significance in Mike Matheny choosing Carlos Martinez over Wainwright. It goes against his past of sticking to vets. You know, I think in my mind, if last year's seasons were closer, even though most of us would have thought Martinez, he might have gone with Wainwright. But last year, you know, Carlos Martinez was so clearly the best pitcher that whatever you think, I think that's, you know, you give him the nod there. I did read the story, you know, you're talking about Adam Wainwright, and, you know, I don't know that it was his idea because of the comments he made were, you know, he was very happy for Carlos Martinez. And He was glad that Carlos was getting that, but it was more, you know, I don't want anything that I didn't earn, and I look forward to starting next year when I've earned it, you know, that kind of thing. What he really said was he made it interesting. He wanted to make it interesting for Mike.
Yeah.
When both of them win 20 games. But, you know, Wainwright is still wanting to do this at some point in time. But he did tell, I think it was in the article by Derek Gould, that he told Mike Matheny that the way Bobby Cox used to do it, you know, because he used to have, you know, Maddox, Smoltz, Glavin. That's, you know, you're not going to go wrong with a decision there. But who starts opening day when you have three Hall of Famers in your rotation? And the idea, Bobby Cox always took whoever finished higher in the Cy Young voting the year before, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And in that vein,
be a great problem to have.
Absolutely, I can live with that. You know, and in that vein, you know, obviously Carlos Martinez. Neither one of them got, you know, Cy Young votes, but Carlos Martinez clearly had a much better season than Adam Wainwright did. And I think, like I said, if Wainwright had been, you know, an ERA of 3.5, or you know, and two or three wins less than Martinez, I think Matheny could have justified it, and I think Matheny would have gone for it. It was just so difficult, especially not only with last year, but the way the spring has gone, to justify Adam Wainwright over Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I, to kind of answer Zach's question on that too, I do think Matheny is evolving. I think that, I think that we've seen that this spring. I know that's not going to be a popular opinion about some of our listeners, you know, because he doesn't get he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt on many things, but I do think he's evolving. I think he's looking at some of these things now and not being so veteran heavy, and kind of seeing that there's a new guard coming up, and I kind of like that. So let's see if he can continue that this year. I know that there's not a lot of confidence in his ability to do that, but maybe he is learning on the job, and you know, maybe we've got something here.
It may be. Like I said, if it was closer and he still went with Carlos Martinez, I would have more confidence in that. I just think it was just one of those things that he could. Now, I know some people have said, wow, you know, it's taking Mike Matheny forever to make this decision. I mean, the Cubs announced John Lester like 3 weeks ago. Why? Well, I think, in my feeling is, Mike Matheny's made this decision a long time ago too. But Carlos Martinez was at the World Baseball Classic. You know, I don't think it was a coincidence that, you know, I think within a day or so after him getting back, they made this call because he wanted to tell Carlos in person. I mean, in fact, I read that he told Carlos Martinez in Spanish to make it even, you know, more special to speak him in his language, to tell him. Although,
and that's cool.
The comment that after that was, you know, that Carlos Martinez, it took a while for him to process it. I just wondered if that meant Mike Matheny's Spanish was really bad. it wasn't the idea. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what this guy just said. But, no, I think Mike Matheny has plenty of practice at Spanish. Don't get me wrong. So anyway, it's good to see. And I think that, we'll see how that plays out during the year. But I think that, you know, Tony La Russa had that reputation of vets over, young players, but he also had like, I think 5 rookies of the year, maybe more, in his career. You know, he would trust the very good ones. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And Carlos Martinez is a very good one. And so mm-hmm. I think that's makes it a lot easier for Mike Matheny. Now, again, I think where the veteran thing is going to come into play, it may be back again with Jerko and, Wong, although they have similar amounts of experience, and things like that, Johnny Peralta getting the edge, things like that. I think they're still on close situations. Or, you know, when there's really almost a coin flip, I think he's going to lean to the veterans. And I don't know that that's wrong. You know, when it's a coin flip, I don't think that's a necessarily bad thing.
No, it's probably the safe play. I agree with that. I think you're going to be able to hit Matt Carpenter anywhere in the lineup, but I think there may be a faction of the fan base that thinks that it's playing Mike's favorites and the old school way of thinking that he hits third the whole time. I mean, maybe it's too vague for me to wrap those together, but I kind of feel like those are some of those things that that guys are going to be like, yeah, you're not progressive at all. You're still plugging him here where he should be the second hitter and, you know, one of those things. And you're playing Jericho over Wong on such and such times. I think guys are going to be pleasantly surprised at some of the decision making this year. I think Shildt's going to make a big difference. You know, quality control on a big league staff almost doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think there's going to be a merger of the analytics and on the field performance that's going to be that'll probably be fun to watch. And I think there'll be some decisions made this year that will paint Matheny in a good light on this one.
That's an interesting idea. I hadn't really given that much thought of how that quality control coach is going to impact things, and not only in one way of how it will impact things, but how it's going to be perceived as impacting things. I think that's going to be interesting because there's a, like I said, there as you know, there's a faction of people that are not going to give Mike Matheny any credit. So if things look like he's improving, I think there are some of those people are going to say, well, it's really Mike Shildt's job. You know, he's doing this. He's the one that has convinced Mike Matheny. We had to get another coach in here to convince Mike Matheny, even though that may not be the case. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Very true.
Interesting to see how that plays out. And again, I think that Mike Matheny has improved over his time period. I mean, you know, how much did we complain about Bunning the first couple of years? it's constant. And I don't think he does it nearly as much anymore. I mean, there's still situations where it probably happens, but for the most part, I don't feel like it's nearly as bad as it used to be. You know, the double switches and the pitching changes and the bullpens, those are still kind of works in progress, I think. But I do think Mike Finney's better than he was. Now, you know, again, and I don't know, sometimes I think the manager spot is overrated to start with anyway. Let's talk a little bit about the bullpen. I mean,
he wasn't as bad a manager in 15 whenever the rotation was loaded.
Yeah.
You know, so I completely agree with you on that. And it's, I think you're right that the double switches have gotten a little bit better. I think the bullpen management is slowly getting better, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm confident this is going to be a positive year for Mike Matheny.
The bullpen is still kind of in flux, not too badly, I think. Like I said, you know, Tuilavala got sent down, most likely because, you know, 12 strikeouts in 6.2 innings is very, very nice. 4 walks and 6 hits in the same period is not so good. you know, it feels like you keep waiting for Tuilavala to make that click, because he does. I mean, you know, like I said, that strikeouts and all that kind of stuff, it's great if he could just have a little bit of command. But, you know, this is his last year. I mean, really. I mean, his last option year, it's been used, so, you know, he can come up and down as much as he wants to this year. But, you know, next year, he's going to be on a major league team. Feels like this is really his last shot with the Cardinals if he's going to make it work.
No, I completely agree. And I thought it was kind of funny on that. You and I, on our last show, we were bragging about how well he had performed, and it was to the day. It was either the Sunday after we were done or the Monday after when he completely imploded in his next appearance and didn't really recover from there. Really had more control problems from there. So he's a player I kind of feel sorry for. You know, he's a former third baseman, you know, switched over. I mean, as Rosenthal was drafted as a shortstop as well, but you wonder if it's, you know, he's just kind of short time to kind of learn this, but how long is it going to take to throw strikes? I kind of feel bad for him with that electric arm.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it before. We saw Mikel Clido, who got traded to St. Louis for Brent when Brendan Rhyne was sent out of town.
Yeah.
And he was the guy, you know, electric arm, throw like crazy, but had no clue where it was going. and so when he was able to get in the zone, it was able to be hit. And he never stuck. I mean, he kind of bounced around a little bit. Never could really stick in the major leagues. And Tuilavala feels like that as well. Now, Sokolovic is still out there. He's still on the team. And again, he is out of options. The longer this lasts, the more likely it is that he's gonna make this team. Doesn't it feel like?
I agree. And I think he's pitched well enough to do so. And I think he's earned the shot. I think he's been very effective this spring. I would like I like the look of the bullpen with him in it.
Yeah, so let's see. I mean, that's him. That's Rosenthal. That's O, who's looked better since he got back. You got Broxton. You've got Cecil, who I have not heard anything of Cecil lately, which may...
Yeah, he has, I read an interesting deal. He has given up a lot of runs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those were in one appearance. And somebody said he's very electric, but he's the kind of person that'll drive Cardinals fans nuts, which kind of worried me. So I kind of looked into his stats a little bit. From what I saw, the only year that he was still good, but wasn't great. He was hurt. So I kind of didn't know what they meant by that. So I'm really curious to see. I was so glad that they made that acquisition. You know, that was kind of one of those under the radar moves, and will really help them. But yeah, I was kind of a head scratcher why that was documented that way.
So I'm just sketching out here, and you tell me who I'm missing, because I've got six guys. I've got Sokolovich, I've got Rosenthal, I've got O, Broxton, Cecil, and Sechrist. There's going to be a seventh arm out there. Is there somebody I'm overlooking, or is there actually a battle here that I'm not paying attention to?
Well, I would think it would be Bowman.
Oh yeah,
would be their seventh spot, and I think that, you know, Weaver was never a consideration. We talked about that in the past to go to Memphis. I think it was down to Sokolovich and Tui Valala, and I think that decision was made this week when he was sent down. So unless somebody just surprises him, I think that everything is kind of set in the ways. Take an injury out of the equation about what's going to be heading north.
Yeah, I will say it's my fault. I was scrolling through looking at the list, and I kind of ignored the zero ERAs because so often those are guys that pitched, you know, an inning, two innings, and
don't
pitch anymore. Bowman's got a zero ERA in nine innings, seven strikeouts and a walk. Just looking at the numbers, and again, it's hard to tell, especially when you're getting into games as he is against probably most likely AAA guys or lower, but still, I mean, I think there was some thought, and I was kind of one of them, that Bowman might regress a little bit this year. That
sure.
They kind of surprised some people. I mean, he was a Rule 5 guy last year, obviously, so which means he wasn't necessarily ready for the major leagues, although he was more like it than Alan Cordova that the Padres took out of single A mm-hmm. for the Cardinals, that apparently is going to be one of three. They're going to have three Rule 5 guys on the Padres this year.
Wow, and that's interesting. Interesting approach about how the Padres are building their roster this year after throwing all that money in last year and the year before.
Yeah, I mean it's almost like they can't draft these people, so they're gonna take them. And part of me just feels like that's gonna be really detrimental to a lot of people's development.
Sure.
But maybe it'll work anyway. Again, right now Bowman is looking pretty good. And again, he's not going to be a guy that's going to pitch in the ninth, but if he's in the sixth and seventh and he's effective like this, you know, again, that bullpen looking sharp.
Yeah, I think the bullpen's going to be their strength. I'm also kind of talk out of both sides of my mouth on this one as well, because I always expect a regression from middle relief guys. You know, and I thought Bowman was really good last year, and he really earned Matheny's trust. He pitched some very big spots, but I think that they have enough in-house and soon to be with Gant and those guys that are that next call up, that you could probably live with a regression on some of those guys. But I think they have a lot of trust in Bowman, and he did look very good last year.
Oh yeah. I mean, as I like to point out, Bowman twice came into the game last year with bases loaded and nobody out and did not allow a run.
Mm.
And then one other time came in with two runners on, walked the first guy. So then he had bases loaded, nobody out, and still didn't allow a run. If you can do that once in a season, you're doing pretty well. To do it three times, that's probably a special year.
Yeah.
I think Gant seems to have really made an impact as well. As you said, probably either a guy that's going to come up in the bullpen at some point in time. He's going to start out in Memphis most likely, but you know, either that or he can be, right now looks like he's even a shot for a sixth or seventh starter if that's what needs to be done.
Yeah, I agree. I think Weaver's injury may have put Gant in line to be that first call-up starter. That it'll be interesting how they handle him, because I mean, I've heard that they've really, really been impressed with him. So, I'm curious to see how they map that out. John put a couple of his posts have been, they're so good. It's the minor league stuff, and he mapped out their rotation, their bullpen, and the infield and outfield in Memphis. And their, rotation has a chance to be loaded in Memphis. So, I mean, it's pretty cool how much young pitching they have. That's ready to be here. I know on your, on the Gateway last week, you had mentioned that about, Lynn, to where he's wholeheartedly going to, go for the highest bidder in, free agency. I would love to have Lynn back, but I think there's, a position of strength of young starting pitching that's probably going to see him out the door.
Well, yeah. I mean, not only do you have these guys that are Memphis, I mean, next year you've got to find a spot for Alex Reyes. I mean, and that's, you know, and that's the most obvious thing. I mean, nobody in that rotation, except for Lynn, is going to move, depending on what Michael Wacha does. And like you said, then, you know, next year you probably have Weaver ready to go. I mean, it's difficult to see him back in AAA, depending on how this year goes. And you say Gant, and then you have some others that are starting to move up the ranks. So yeah, I think I just can't see how Lynn comes back. As much as he's been effective and he's done a very good job, and he's that kind of workhorse that you want to have in your rotation. I don't see how the Cardinals can do it. But you know, like I said, we saw five scoreless innings out of Michael Wacha today. He's got a 2 ERA for the spring. You know, again, it's hard to know when to take these things and how much to take these things for, what they are. But, you know, throwing five scoreless against the Nationals, is something, at this late in the year.
Sure. And what Wacha has done this spring to come in and show that he's fought for the job, he worked for it, he's healthy, he did the things they wanted him to do. It was what I was hoping Wong would do on the offensive side of the ball. I was hoping he would have that kind of spring to where we wouldn't have these conversations of, you know, man, well, I just don't know. I'm kind of losing faith in him. Well, Wacha hasn't done that. Wacha has almost, I hate to say this, made you forget about the Reyes injury a little bit. He's pitched that well. And it's one of those where, okay, well, Reyes wasn't even guaranteed a spot in the rotation. So this is how this is going to work out. And Wacha's ran with it. And I'm a big Wacha fan just because he's the jam he got out of in 13 against the Dodgers will always be one of my favorite pitching moments when it's, you know, second, third, nobody out, and he struck out the side, including Puig, to get out of that inning. I'm a big Wacha fan. I hope that this can last the whole year. That's, you know, fingers crossed type situation.
Yeah, it's interesting reading the article here that he hit 99 on the gun today. Now that's stadium radar, and who knows how well it's calibrated, but you know, if he's been building up strength and stuff, that's going to be something interesting to see as well. Again, I think we're always going to be holding our breath when Wacha goes out there, knowing that he can be effective, but also knowing that if he has a bad start, you all are automatically going to start thinking, is the shoulder flaring back up? And so that's going to be kind of I think, of course, everybody has their own questions, but, you know, I don't think we worry too much about, you know, what Mike Leake's going to do, because we know what he's pretty much probably going to do.
True.
It's going to depend on who's going to catch the ball behind him, but we don't worry about Carlos. We don't worry about Lance Lynn for the most part, because he looks like he's back to being Lance Lynn. I think we worry about Michael Wacha, and I think we're going to worry about Adam Wainwright, because it feels to me that Wainwright's going to be one of these guys that's going to have a run of good and a run of bad.
Sure. If you truth serumed a lot of Cardinals fans and maybe even insiders with the Cardinals, the biggest question mark right now is how Wainwright is going to rebound. I think Walk has won that many people over at this point. You're exactly right. You're going to get what you get out of Leake, and I feel like you're going to do the same out of Lynn. But, you know, Wainwright may be the big question mark in the rotation. I mean, it's kind of painful to say. Back to Walker a little bit. I mean, touching 99 is crazy, but I mean, 95 plus, if he has command of that fastball and where his changeup can be dominating again, I mean, that's Carlos Martinez type stuff. I mean, he could be really lethal. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and we'll see if he's able to keep that up and, you know, if it's again one of these things that he's been, he's been rested over the off season and things like that. And as the grind of the season comes, we'll see how long it lasts. But it definitely is good to see right now. You know, I think that's about it. I mean, I think we're going to kind of know. I don't think there's going to be any surprises. There is one more part of the roster that I want to talk about. We'll talk about it when the Twitter questions come up. But for the most part, you know, I think this is probably the team we're going to see. I don't think there's anybody that's going to come out of nowhere. I think people have made some impressions this spring, and maybe have raised their stock on when they can come up. But I don't think anybody has snuck in, to this roster, that we didn't see coming.
No. Yeah, I agree with that. It's, and I think everybody knows what the Twitter question's going to be. And, we'll get to that, but I agree with, the St. Louis media on this one.
All right. Well, let's go ahead then. Let's go ahead and transition into Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
And to make that transition, we'll go ahead and ask the Twitter question. It comes from Cassie Pink Daisy 08. She'd already wanted to know about the seventh bullpen guy, so we've talked about that. But her position also mentioned that Derek Gould had said that he thinks Tommy Pham is going to go to AAA, and Jose Martinez is going to be on the 25-man roster. Now, not only did I see that, I saw somewhere else, I think it was in Brandon Schaefer's feed, that maybe he had gotten it from Frank Cusimano, that Pham was expected to be the backup center fielder in Memphis, backing up, I guess, Harrison Bader.
Wow.
I don't think there's any surprise that Jose Martinez is on this team. I'm still not sold that what we see out of spring training is a really good indication of what we're going to see out of Martinez going forward. But, I mean, he's had a very good spring. Tommy Pham hasn't. It's hard to say you should do it the other way around.
Yeah, you got to love the fact that a guy has come in and competed and earned the spot. I mean, that's the thing, is I'm just like, I'm glad they're willing to do that and not give it to a Pham by default. I don't know if anything Pham's going to get is by default with this organization. He may be in Colton Wong type territory, you know, as far as how they view him. You know, he stayed healthy, which I think is a major achievement for him. The backup in Memphis is interesting, but, I think that Martinez has hit. I think he's earned it, and I think he's shown enough defensive flexibility to where they don't have any questions of playing him in the corners and at first base.
No, I would not be surprised at all if whenever John Mozeliak makes a move, and I don't know when that'll be, I don't know what it'll be, but whatever it is, if Tommy Pham's not thrown into the deal.
Sure.
Just to get him a change of scenery, because it doesn't feel like it's going to happen in St. Louis. Again, if he can't even start, I mean, if he's not even going to start at AAA, which, I mean, and the guy's got talent. I mean, if he stays healthy, I mean, he's got some really interesting talent. But if he's not going to start in AAA, that means a whole lot of people are ahead of him. You know, you got four major league outfielders ahead of him, and probably, you know, two or three of at least the Memphis ones might be as well. You know, he might get called up before Bader, depending on injury situations. But still, it just doesn't feel like there's much spot for him there. So I just think John Mozeliak moves him as his earliest convenience.
Yeah, that would seem to be the most logical move. There's a part of me, I mean, you know it's going to play out through spring, but there's a slight part of me that he's still involved. I thought that may be an off-season flip of some sort, which I can kind of say the same for Adams whenever they announced that Carpenter would be at first ever, like we talked about earlier. I kind of thought those two would be the ones that were kind of jettisoned out of the organization. So that may happen pretty quickly. I don't see a lot of advantage of coming out and saying that he's not even going to be your starting center fielder in Memphis. That's the only thing that I don't know. I can't figure that one out. So that really hurts his value, because then you're like, well, he's going to get released soon, so why trade anybody for him?
Well, and I mean, that is one. I mean, that's just kind of hurt. I don't know if that's been official or not.
And, sure, sure.
But, you know, but obviously he's not going to start over Harrison Bader.
No.
He needs the developmental. And I don't know. I'd have to go look at the write-up there at the Red Bird Daily on who's going to play the other outfield spots out there. But, I mean, he could play left or right, you would think.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they just want, you know, they want him to develop a center. I don't know what that works out to be. But, again, this organization has seemed to always have issues fully embracing a Tommy Pham for whatever reason. And another Twitter question that we've got here that kind of flows in with that comes from Mark Norton, MD Norton 1, who asks if Jose Martinez can turn into Ryan Ludwig. I don't know if he has any magic tricks up his sleeve, but if he's going to, I don't think we're going to see him become this slugging outfielder that becomes kind of a key part. I mean, I think Ryan Ludwig was really a key part of this team for the couple of years he was there. And, you know, I just don't see Jose Martinez being anything more than a fourth outfielder and a guy that, I think this, like I said, I think that we've seen the best of him this spring.
Sure. I wouldn't be surprised. If there's as many home runs, I'd be really surprised, but I would think it would probably be more of a Hazel Baker type situation. They'll probably use him a lot not necessarily in center. I don't mean that, but he'll probably get a lot of at bats off the bench, probably play quite a bit of the corners and hopefully it's not as much as Hazel Baker, because that would mean something that has went wrong. But that's, I would kind of compare him to that more than I would a Ludwig. Ludwig had a huge season, you know, in St. Louis that year. I know, I understand that he was off the trash heap, but, he was an all-star one year.
Yeah, I mean,
not to completely poop all over that question.
Really, when you look at it, I just pulled up Ryan Ludwig's stats, and he was 28 when he came to St. Louis, which is what Jose Martinez is. And he never had, but, I mean, he'd played in the major leagues, but he only had probably about a total of, you know, 300 plate appearances, 400 plate appearances before then. So I can see where the connections could be made, but, you know, Ryan Ludwig came into St. Louis, and I look at his, you know, he had an OPS of, OPS plus of 125, you know, had 84 homers and 305 RBIs in 4 years. I mean, it would just be pretty remarkable for Jose Martinez to do that, because again, you know, even though Ryan Ludwig only had, you know, a handful, a little bit more than a handful, probably, you know, half a season's worth over 3 years of at bats in the major leagues, that's still a lot more than Jose Martinez has had. I mean, Jose Martinez didn't get any until last year. I just don't, again, without really knowing a lot about Jose Martinez and really digging into the comparisons, it would be a very, very big stunner for that. Because when Ryan Ludwig came to St. Louis, he was expected to be a starter, and nobody's expecting that out of Jose Martinez.
Yeah, I don't think so. Do you have Ludwig's numbers up right now?
Yeah.
What? He had a massive amount of doubles. The year he was an all-star. I can't remember what it was.
In 2008, that was his all-star season. He had 40 doubles and 37 homers.
I knew it was worse. I was honestly thinking it was 38 and 40. But yeah, they were big extra base hit numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to you. He came in, he had MVP votes that year. You know, had a 151 OPS plus. All the way around, pretty. He had 20 doubles his three full seasons in St. Louis. He had at least 20 doubles, and he had, well, the minimum was 14 home runs. You know, that's numbers that I just don't see Jose Martinez getting close to.
No, yes, yeah, I agree with that. But stupid question. Would the Cardinals be better if he had those type numbers, or would that be indicative of one of the two young outfielders not performing very well?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, we talked about how much rope you give Colton Long, but I can't imagine how bad that Ryan Ludwig or Steven Piscotty would do to get Jose Martinez into the lineup that way.
I agree, you know, 100%.
Even if it would have to be, you know, mid-May or something like that. And, you know, again, could Martinez work his way in and then really go on a run? You know, maybe. I just don't know that he's capable of that, but
sure.
You know, I mean, I'm definitely not a evaluator of talent, so I guess it's a possibility, but.
No, it's a great question.
Yeah.
It's a great question mainly because we get to talk about Ludwig so much.
There you go. And then some people that, always good to dip back into Cardinal history a little bit, so.
Absolutely.
I think that's a little interesting. All right, see what other questions we have. Well, we have a couple here from Scott, our Texas Cards fan one. I'm just gonna read them together and we can have a discussion. It says, is it bad that I hope, Mike Matheny puts Adams in left field and Adams misplays about four balls so that Mozeliak will realize Matheny isn't okay? Of all the things you projected in the offseason, how many scenarios had a Buffalo playing left field? Now,
I'm gonna let you take this question because your response was good.
I had planned for a chimpanzee to play short, so I was way off. I haven't seen Adams out there. And there's two, I mean, he's only been out there two games, and as far as I can tell, he hasn't even had anything hit to him. So it's difficult to know. I know it's difficult to say that, you know, he's a, you know, ungraceful lout that's playing outfield. I mean, if you want to see an ungraceful lout play outfield, just stick me out there, okay? You know, that said, and again, I don't know it when you get to the idea of John Mozeliak and Mike Matheny and what would it take to, you know, open Mo's eyes or whatever, if you will. I just don't see that happening without, you know, another year missing the playoffs in a clubhouse that melts down again, because it really sounds like last year was. You know, other than that, I don't see that there's anything that Matheny's going to do to have Mo get rid of him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it is what it is. I think those two are in for the long haul. I think it would have to be something drastic to happen, you know, for something to go down. I honestly think Matheny moves on before Mozeliak would fire him.
Well, you know, I guess the only thing that you could see, because, you know, it's happened before, is you could see that the Cardinals sign Yadier Molina to some sort of extension that keeps him, you know, with the organization, maybe
great
a coach
point.
Or something, and then he takes over Mike Matheny's job, because that's apparently what he does, is he takes over, and then he becomes like, you know, a Hall of Fame manager, because that's what he does.
Yeah.
If you want to look at history repeating itself. I think Matheny, and I don't think Matheny's in any hurry to get along. I mean, you know, again, if you just want to look at this on a financial side of things, we know Mike Matheny had some financial issues before he took this job. I don't imagine that, I know that they pay him all right, they pay him well, but it's not necessarily where he wants to just, you know, sit back and lay around on his money. You know, he might kind of need to work. And so I don't think he's going to just turn it over voluntarily. But I don't think there's any reason that Mo's going to fire him anytime soon. And again, well, I think we've talked about it before. I don't know that there's anybody out there that just says, hey, I'm going to make your team 10 wins better.
Mm-hmm. And, well, and that's the, you know, what guys probably aren't going to want to hear is, you know, in all his years of doing this, he's played in the World Series. He's made the playoffs every year but one, and he's still learning on the job because he had never done it before. I would think his rope is pretty long.
Yeah. You know, and again, I know people will point to the results, and that's fair. But it's also fair to say that, you know, he took over a team that went to the World Series. And I know there's been turnover throughout this time period, but he didn't have to build it from the ground up. Let's put it that way.
True.
And again, I think he's done a fine, a well enough job. Let's put it that way. I don't want to say fine job because cards will come after me or something.
we got to tiptoe around.
Yeah,
I'm kind of worried how Scott's going to respond to anything I've said.
but you know, I think that I think he. Again, I guess my mental aspect is I just don't know how much a manager makes a difference, at least tactically. I mean, there are times that it matters, but there are times, so many times that a manager can make the right call and the player doesn't perform, or the manager can make the wrong call and the players get him out of it, or, you know, he makes the call that everybody else would have made. I think there are times where there's inventive managers, and I think a manager can be helpful and hurt, but again, if a manager influences, you know, more than five games on a year, I mean, when, you know, it costs you five wins, I'd be a little surprised, I think. I mean, it's a hard thing to quantify, but that's just kind of my feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I would agree with that. It's, you know, it's easy to, I love La Russa, but, you know, it's easy to, get yourself out of problems when you have Carpenter that can start the next day and Albert in the lineup every day.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you take it to basketball and you look at Phil Jackson, he had Michael Jordan.
Yeah, true.
Kobe Bryant. And, you know, when you have those players, it's helpful to win. It helps you win, for sure. All right. One of our questions here is just for you. And Kyle Reese, another Red Bull writer, wants to know if you realize how good you are getting on the podcast. So I don't know if there's some sort of, you know, site rivalry or reason to step up to you or something like that. But in case you wanted to know, there you go.
Kyle's a genuine dude. He's a good guy. He was really supportive of me getting into this. He's really done me a lot of favors and helped me out on some articles and done some things like that. He's a good guy. He is, I think that was kind of a pat on the back and I appreciate it.
And then our final question comes from the original host of this show, not when it was named Best Dan's in baseball, Dan Buffa. Maybe people don't realize that Dan used to do this show. It's only been a year, but it's been a long year. Dan has asked, who inspired you at a young age to write about the Cardinals? you want to tackle that one first, or you want me to do it?
We're at an hour and 20 minutes, and mine won't be short, so if you want to go ahead.
Well, you know, honestly, you know, when I read this question and Dan sent it a few days ago, and I read this question, it's like, you know, I don't know that there was anybody, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't grow up in St. Louis. I didn't grow up reading Bernie Mikulas or Joe Strauss or Rick Hummel or anything like that. I didn't read them on a regular basis. And I've grown up, you know, watching TV, watching things, but yeah, I think the ideas and the opinions are pretty much just me wanting to put stuff out there and get it off my chest to some degree. I don't think there's an inspiration. Now, there's been people that have been encouraging along the way, but I didn't sit down and say, you know, when I started this blog, which will be 10 years in July, I wasn't sitting down because I wanted to be like Derek Gould, or I wanted to be like somebody else. It was just, hey, let's do this for fun. It was a hobby, and it never has amounted to anything more than that.
No, yeah, I think that's well put. And that was kind of the way that I was going to approach it. Mine wasn't necessarily a writer. Mine was my grandpa. He's the one that we come from a big baseball family. He played in the, he was in Korea and played on a base team there just a bit. And he was always a Cardinals fan. We had the AAA team in here through the 60s and 70s. And they were regulars at the ballpark. And that's kind of what got me onto my love of baseball. It was, you know, I lived outside of Tulsa. I lived in a small town about 30 miles east of here. So we would get some of the Cardinals feed, but it would be like just the Sunday game on like the non-cable channel, whatever Tulsa would bring through. So mine was more of, I mean, that was pre-internet. That was anything. It was what I could get in the papers and what I could get in Sports Illustrated until, you know, your baseball weeklies and stuff like that started coming out through USA Today. But, I had never really considered writing. I remember in 87, when the Cards were in the series that year, I had covered my whole book and all these Cardinals drawings and everything. And I can't remember. It's like a science book or whatnot. And after I read this question, it really brought back a lot of memories on that, because I remember during the playoffs, we had to write It had nothing to do with baseball. It had nothing to do with anything like that. But I mapped out a whole game. And the teacher had me sit after the, after class. And she goes, I just want to let you know something. She said, she goes, I would have felt like I watched that game after you did it. You know, and I was in the fifth grade. And she said that to me. She goes, if you, if I were you, I'd kind of consider maybe some kind of broadcasting. And I was like, yeah, you know, I at that point, I still thought I'd be playing. I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to be broadcasting. I'll be playing at that point. And I didn't really think about that until Dan had kind of posted that question to us, because even getting into this, like I told you beforehand, it was more of a, I'd been asked by a group before and kind of chickened out to do it and just figured, you know, I'm 40 years old. It's been, you know, a long time since I was in school, you know, wrote some papers back then. I got a history degree. I didn't have to do a lot of writing. I didn't know how good I would be at it. And, you know, whenever John had kind of approached me and I kind of talked to him, I said, hey, if you had something open, I would be more than willing to do it. He said, well, send something my way. And I got a lot of influence from yourself, from John himself, from Dan, and from Joe Schwartz. That I go, man, I really like the content they're putting out. I said, it's almost like me talking to my buddies. That's the way that I've always approached this. Just write like you've been talking to your friends your whole life about, you know, what you think about this ball club. And that's kind of how mine went. The inspiration to be a baseball fan started a long, long time ago. And it just kind of stuck with me, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I kind of get inspired every day by, you know, even the Cards Madness stuff. I mean, I like how it's all kind of a community, and we get along, and I'm just glad that I jumped in, and I hope that wasn't long-winded, but that's just kind of how I feel about it.
Well, we're glad you did too, and I've always felt like my role is always should be a guy that people could read and realize, hey, I can do this too. Because if this guy can do it, anybody can. So that's kind of my, you know, kind of the way I go about it. Yeah. All right, we have run a bit long tonight, but let's go ahead before we wrap up. Since we did the big show last week, let's talk a little bit about Cards Madness and how it is gone. The first two rounds are done. The Brock and Smith regionals. The voting's still open on the second round. Most of these are actually, and they'll start closing tomorrow at some point in time. Most of these are fairly decided, although there's one that we'll talk a little bit about, that's still kind of close. Let's talk, let's just break it down by regions, I think, and we'll start with the Mutual region. Right now, the people left are, Birds and Bat 13. They're going to play, Simbacron Mutual, and then Cardinals GIF is going up against the upset-minded, the Easton. The Easton, the 10 seed, has moved into the Sweet 16.
Huge, yeah.
Yeah, I think that may have been the most surprising thing out of this bracket was to see, you know, I wasn't sure that Easton, I know he's got a pretty good following. He's been doing this for a little while, but not only was, you know, I think the seeding is kind of ranked by a number of followers, so not only was his follower count a little lower, he went on vacation, I think, as this thing started, and then to beat a guy, who used to run VEB, and then to beat Buffa, who's got quite a following. That's pretty impressive for the youngster.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's what I was saying. I wondered how many of the youngsters he got on board for some of the votes. That's exactly what I thought about when he beat Dan.
Yeah, it was a little bit, surprising to see that. You know, I know your pick here was Birds on the Bat, so to get out of this regional, that still looks pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, you know what? It's just like we had talked about before, though. Cardinals Gifts is coming on pretty strong. They've got the visuals, so I've noticed that makes a big difference in the voting.
It can, yeah. I think that they might be. Like I said, that was our matchup. I'm a little interested to see if they're able to. To knock Birds on the Bat out, because Birds on the Bat has the advantage, a lot of followers there, so we'll see. Gibson Regional right now, VEB's main account is going to go up against Carly Scheiber. And then Craig Edwards ruined my bracket by beating Little Scooter today. I had Scooter going to the finals, so that's pretty much shot that. And then I have moved on to the Sweet 16. I gotta say, I'm not looking forward to having to face Craig a guy that writes on a national platform, Fangraphs a lot of times. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to come out. I feel like that's going to be a tough one for me, though.
Both those rounds are going to be really good. Yeah, the Bertos, the Schauber, and you and Edwards are going to be really good. Seems like Craig has gained a little momentum after beating Zach in the first round. Because I didn't think he would beat Scooter as easy as he did.
Yeah, I was a little surprised at that. I thought Heather's got the, of course Heather didn't, neither one of them did a whole lot of campaigning for it or anything.
No.
I thought Heather's following might be a little bit broader than Craig's. But like I said, Craig's got a lot of people that follow him. So that's if I'm right, I think this is the round. Yeah, this region is it's a 1, 2, 3, 4. Top four seeds have advanced there. So I don't know. Find out. Brock Regional, we have STL Wynn is right now going up against. In the upset, the 16 seed knocked off Larry Underwood, who apparently had no urge to be involved in this at all.
It was funny. That was the one I was going to give you a lot of credit for. You were like, "Well, don't always go by the Twitter followers," and that's what happened to me. I really thought I was like, "He's going to make a serious run on that," because I didn't realize he had so many people. Yeah. But it didn't help him much.
No, I will say that opinions are mixed. Let's put it that way on Mr. Underwood. Appears like, and again, he didn't any tweets toward him about this seemed to be fairly rejected. I think he was glad to lose early. So right now, Wynn is winning 70-30%, and so that's probably going to be a victory for him. And then let's see, the next one is Texas Card Fan 1 and STL Cards 314. Right now, Texas Card Fan 1, our good friend Mr. Scott, winning by 71-29. I don't guess that's too much for. I'm a little surprised that the gap is so big there, though.
Yeah. Scott is interactive, though.
Yeah.
He's good. He's very, very good Twitter follow. He's on top of everything. So it's tough to beat those guys.
Yeah, I had Wynn winning. I had in my bracket, I have Wynn against him, but I had Wynn winning. Good. I have a feeling Scott's going to move on to the Elite Eight, and that means he's going to probably on a collision course with STL Cards, who's winning 61-31 here against the Matinals. That would be fairly fascinating to see those two get together. There would be no holds barred, I don't think.
No, and it's funny. We were almost right to the second to when Cards turned it on, because he has really been interactive and funny and involving everybody, and he's been doing a very good job of working the polls on this one.
Well, and he'll probably need to, because his next outing right now, it's STL Cup of Joe versus Joe B. Curtis, and Joe's winning 63-37. So, when Joe and Cards get together, that should be fun, because Joe's got a very strong following, but so does Cards.
Yeah, that'll be a good matchup. Joe is, he's gaining some notoriety on the media front too. He's done a show the last 2 weeks, so that always helps.
Yeah. All right, let's in the last regional, Cardinals Farm winning right now against Crash STL, who pulled the 8-9 upset. No, well, it's not a huge upset, but he did pull that the first round. It sits 62-38. Retro Simba losing right now to John Moe GM 60-40, and again, I had I feel like, of course, I like Mark's work and I like Mark
sure.
a lot. I follow John Moe as well. He's a fun guy to follow as well, but little surprised that is again the gap that it is.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it's you would think that Mark if he worked a little bit on it, it would probably maybe swing the other way.
It might, but again, he's not one that's ever.
No, and it'll never happen. But
here's the one that's interesting, and I think this is going to be fun to see. Most of these competitions have between 165 to 200 votes. We've got Birds on the Bat Show versus Brendan Schaefer, and it's at 680 votes right now with 14 hours left. Now, Birds on the Bat Show, of course, also has not, I don't think, pulled out the big gun on this round. They did in the first round. I don't think Benji Molina has tweeted yet. But they had a number of people listening to the show, a number of podcasts that retweet. Brendan is still right now winning 51-49, and I know I talked to him a little bit today. I thought there was some concern with all these people coming out, you know, all these podcasts, all this, you know, links, and that many votes. For him to still be hanging in there, I think that's a good sign for him.
No, I agree. And that is a very interesting matchup because like we talked about whenever we were doing the show after the brackets came out, this may be Brendan's maybe only year that he's allowed to get on this because he has done a great job on his radio show. I mean, he may be at spring training and the winter meetings next year, which could maybe put him out of any of the amateur status to have on here. He's an up and comer. So I think that one's going to be an interesting see how that played out. But I did not realize there was over 600. Now, when I looked this afternoon, I was like, that's going to be a good showdown because I kept thinking Benji was going to come out and help him out on them. He may be in Puerto Rico celebrating with his brother right now, though. You know, you never know. But yeah, that one will be down to the wire.
Could be. That's like I said, that's gotten more votes than probably any three combined. So be interesting to see how tomorrow plays out. And then the final one is Cardinals Tales up 61-39 on John J. F. 125, John Fleming from Viva Alberto's. Again, Bob, it's not a big surprise. As you know, Bob's a jugger, a powerhouse to be reckoned with.
Yeah, he was, I think he played it low key on our matchup and I worked hard to make it even close and called in all of my friends to help me out any way possible. And it was, all for naught and he didn't even have to call anybody in. So if he would have had to, make one tweet about winning, he probably would have drilled me. But that's who I've hitched my wagon on this one for the rest of the way.
Yeah, you know, all he has to do is put out a little bit of his dinner and
exactly.
So, again, this has been fun. I know there's a lot of people that complain about they didn't get in, or you know, it's a stroke fest of people patting each other on the back. But
sure.
John took as many nominations on people. If you didn't get in, then some part of that's on you. And I think we talked about this on the show last time. I think this is just a good time to, you know, this last little bit of spring training. We're not, you know, it's going to be done before the season starts. You might as well. And if you don't like it, you mute the tag and then go on. I don't, and honestly, I haven't seen as much, as there was last year. I feel like it's a lot more muted, a lot more low key than it was last year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was on the periphery last year, but there was a lot of, there was some of those conversations where you're like, man, I'm going to have to step away until these are done, you know, for a little while last year. And there hasn't been as many. I mean, Cards is really funny. He's a funny follow. And him battling and putting out those statements. Even my wife, she was rolling about that one that he put out against his first round matchup. It was really funny. He put out that statement. It was really, really good.
Yeah, it's always interesting there. So, all right. So anyway, if you haven't voted on there, Redbird Dailies has all the polls that are still open, and then we'll have polls all weekend long. Again, if you're listening and if you want to vote for me over Greg, I'm fine with that. I don't know if it'll work, but it's worth a shot. Anyway. All right. So we have done a plenty tonight. And so we'll go ahead and wrap it up for the evening. We'll get back at you, either Alan or I or John or I, depending if John's schedule ever frees up that he can get in here. Nothing else during the season. I'm going to have to record him doing some minor league reports so we can keep that segment of the show going. And you and I aren't going to be able to cover that.
He's strong. That's one of those areas I can't even touch it.
Yeah. So, but somebody will be with you next weekend, and that'll be right before opening day. We're right there, and it's a wonderful thing, and we'll get a chance to really talk about what this stuff means. It's not theoretical then, it actually counts for something. So, for Alan, I'm Daniel. We'll talk at you later.
Have a good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!